Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick. 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Let's go to our phone line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Easton Freeze, who reports on the Tennessee Titans for A to Z Sports. Easton, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you on for the first time.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Great to be on.
Yeah, so let's start here, Easton. You were at the NFL owner meetings earlier this week. You were part of that super secret scrum with Mike Borgonzi that wasn't publicized. I searched for the video. I could never find any. But during your time there, in regards to the Titans, what is something you are more sure of now than you were before you attended the meetings earlier this week?
Yeah, that's a great question, because the Titans PR team, I think, did a pretty good job between Borgonzi on Monday and Saleh on Tuesday of making sure there was enough mixed signal for everybody to come away with just a couple of questions you wish you had the answer to. And so the thing that I think stuck with me most was when we talked to Borgonzi, and I had kind of a back and forth with him about, in general, positional value and when it comes to premium players versus premium positions, how do you weigh that at the top of the draft? The fact that he came on pretty strong with, we are taking the best football player, was something that I won't say definitively points to, oh, well, they're definitely taking Jeremiah Love, which I think a lot of people saw and ran with. But it does leave me thinking, if they don't take Jeremiah Love, whoever they do take at four or wherever they end up picking is somebody that they'll have to come to that podium and explain why that was a better football player than Love or whoever is your top player in this class. For some people, that's Sonny Styles.
Let's build off of that, Easton. As you said, there are a ton of Titans fans who are hoping the team drafts Jeremiah Love. The man sitting to my right, Derek Mason, is the conductor of the Love train. And as you said, Borgonzi told you that he will take the best football player. But do you think there is part of him who will struggle with the idea of drafting a player at a non-premium position with the number four overall pick?
Yes, a very big part of him. And that's why, even after what I just said and the things that I heard this week, you know, I put out an article at AtoZSports.com yesterday where I kind of did a pie chart of percentages with where I think the Titans will go at pick four. And Jeremiah Love did not have the biggest piece of that pie. It was Arvell Reese and David Bailey, the top two edge rushers in this class, who I think have about a 50% chance of being the Titans pick. Now, the pushback there obviously is that there's a pretty decent chance both of them are gone by four. And in the scenario in which Arvell Reese and David Bailey go two and three, I really don't have a great beat on where I think the Titans end up going at four. If you made me choose, I would predict Jeremiah Love, but I think it would be very much like a necessary evil type of pick for Mike Borgonzi. Not that Jeremiah Love is some evil player or that taking a top running back is some awful, terrible thing, but I do think that he's somebody who fundamentally likes to stick to the basics, likes to draft in the trenches and take premium players with premium picks. And so it may just break in a way that makes Jeremiah Love make the most sense for them. And he's an awesome football player. And how much fun would he be to put into this offense with Cam Ward? But I still think Mike Borgonzi is the type of guy to want to go with that premium position.
Easton, yesterday we were having a conversation about outliers in the NFL draft. And I know that you're on top of this. It seems like many of the top prospects in this year's draft are outliers historically. For instance, Jeremiah Love, a running back, being taken with a top five pick. Reuben Baines and his short arms. Sonny Styles being an off-ball linebacker. I believe you wrote something about this for A to Z Sports the other day. Caleb Downs being a safety. There seem to be a lot of outliers among the top prospects in this draft. Which player who could be considered an outlier do you think poses the least amount of risk at number four overall?
That's a great question, because you're totally right. You're all over it. Well, we need to define risk, right? Because the player that I think has the least risk in terms of just being a bust in the NFL is Jeremiah Love. Like, I'm so sure he's going to be an awesome running back. And history bears this out. The top first-round running backs, top 10 pick running backs in the past decade have almost all been pretty much as billed. They've been really good players. But there's another way to define risk, which is the risk of taking a top 10 player in a draft and that player not having a premium impact on your team, not impacting wins or losses. And that's what I think the Titans could say. Well, a guy like David Bailey, if he falls there, something that Robert Saleh was saying to us Tuesday that really stuck with me, and it's not the first time he's brought it up, is I think he really likes to emphasize, and a lot of coaches do, having a changeup and having a deep bag of tools is obviously very useful in the NFL. But number one, what matters absolutely the most is what do you win with? What is your go-to? What is your fastball? And is that going to win in the NFL? And for all of the potential flaws in David Bailey's profile, he is somebody that I am certain has a fastball, and it is his wicked get-off. That first step when he is lined up with his hand out of the dirt, ready to take off and take the quarterback's head off from a wide nine alignment, is something that I know will work in the NFL. It will. That speed rusher ability is something that works, and that's why I think the Titans could say maybe he's the least risky guy for us.
We'll talk with Easton Free from A to Z. Now, Easton, when you mentioned that and you say the fastballs, wouldn't you consider, you know, a Jeremiah Love who, if I'm taking someone, is anyone, is Jeremiah Love because of his instant impact and how it will deliberately, you know, help the quarterback. But don't you feel that Jeremiah Love not only has a fastball, but he also has a changeup and a sinker?
He does. He is the number one home run hitter in this class in terms of offensive players. There's not a question about it. I really don't have an issue with Jeremiah Love's profile in a vacuum at all. Mm-hmm. It is purely a process and team building approach thing that there's a financial element of this that has to be considered. You are not getting value on the contract of running back there. Some people care less about that than others. That's fine. But you are not getting the value. I mean, what did we just see with Seattle, right? They win the Super Bowl, and they have a number of different contract wrinkles to work out, and they end up letting Ken Walker walk to go to Kansas City, where he gets $14 or $15 million a year, and they make JSN a premium player at a premium position, the highest-paid wide receiver in the history of the league. Both of those guys were on rookie contracts and getting paid, you know, in NFL terms, relatively the same amount of money. And now look at the difference, the delta in how much they're getting paid. That's contract value, right? And then we also look at a number of teams. Again, what's weird is you look at the top 10 picked running backs in the last decade or so, and there's this strange divide between the players ending up being good players, but the teams they go to ending up being really crappy franchises. Like, we're talking about the Giants and the Raiders and the Falcons and the, you know, early 2010s Bills, the Rams before they had Jared Goff and Matt Stafford, like some franchises that aren't exactly a murderer's row. And I think it's kind of a complicated answer, but largely it's because running back is so dependent on your passing game forcing defenders to respect the box to not stack the box, to respect the backfield, and your offensive line being able to run block. Running back is a finishing piece on an offense far more often than it is a tent pole piece for an offense. Now, the Tennessee Titans are an organization that are kind of unique in the fact that they have had three or four arguably tent pole running backs in their history. And a lot of Titans fans are most fond of those players. So I'm not saying it can't be done. It's just, that's why people like me, and I'm suspecting somebody like Mike Borgonzi, fundamentally are kind of allergic to taking a running back this highly.
Now, Easton, you had an opportunity, like Adam said, to talk with Coach in this double secret scrum that the reporters had. And you talked about, because you just put out an article, and I would advise people go out and read it, the Titans' sneaky position of need nobody is talking about. And you mentioned the linebackers. What did you gather from that conversation?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun writing this article because it kind of got to nerd out a little bit, but it is interesting as it pertains to the draft. We spoke with Saleh, and he did a really good job of walking us through what his defense requires of the linebackers. And I could spend the next 30 minutes on this and hijack your show, but I won't. I just encourage folks to go and read the whole thing. His quotes are illuminating as it pertains to how much his San Francisco defense asks of the linebackers east to west, whereas the Denard Wilson Baltimore defense that we were working with last year is one that is pretty unique in the way that it asks linebackers to get north and south. And in today's NFL, there just aren't as many true thumper linebackers as there used to be. A lot of guys work more laterally than they do horizontally. Mm-hmm. Laterally than vertically. And Cedric Gray, his breakout last year was demonstrating how unique he is in the league when it comes to getting downhill and being an impact player north and south. And that's an awesome trait. But I'm not sure if it works hand in hand with what Saleh's defense is requiring, because Saleh's defense needs that middle Mike linebacker to basically patrol between the hashes from hook to hook. And he needs the Will linebacker, the weak side linebacker, to be even more freaky athletically when it comes to covering range sideline to sideline. He said that guy needs to be patrolling basically from hook to flat. So, you know, 3/4 of the field. And the combination of Cedric Gray and Cody Barton does not work in that setup for me at all. Last year, they experimented a little bit with Cedric Gray being the Mike, which I think he's traditionally more of that middle linebacker type from an archetype standpoint, and having Cody Barton be the Will, but it wasn't really working out from a communication standpoint, right? The Mike linebacker is usually the guy who's the green dot, and he's kind of the quarterback of the defense, and that's what they wanted Cody Barton to do. I don't think you can run back that setup. I think you need a setup where you have somebody who is more athletically attuned to being rangy sideline to sideline as your Will, and you let Cedric Gray become that starting middle linebacker, the Mike. And there are options for that in the draft, which I wrote about in the article, but this is a kind of a technical scheme thing that I think a lot of people are missing that I find really interesting.
That is good stuff. Easton Fries is with us from A to Z Sports. So Easton, what's your interpretation of the Hendon Hooker acquisition as it applies to Will Levis? Because I think we've all seen, you know, trying to read between the lines, they'd like to find a new home for him. Do you think this ups their stock or their leverage to try to make a deal by adding more guys like this, knowing that Trubisky and Hooker are now in the mix?
Well, first of all, I mean, just how perfect a transaction is that to come across the wire on April Fool's Day? I had so many people asking me, like, this can't be real. And my first reaction was, this can't be real. It's so perfect. I love thinking about going back exactly 3 years from today and telling everybody that Hendon Hooker and Will Levis will be on the same Titans roster in the very near future. Neither of them will be even remotely competing for the starting job, and neither is likely to be on the final 53-man roster, because that's a very funny story to tell. I think the Hendon Hooker addition isn't even really the last nail in the coffin for Will Levis as a Titan. I think it's like an additional nail on top of the last nail, because we've already kind of been here. The writing has been on the wall at least since the Trubisky signing, because this team isn't going to keep more than two quarterbacks on the active roster. And a guy like Hooker is certainly a candidate to, you know, if I'm being 100% honest, I think that he is a guy that we kind of all assumed might be out of the league at this point. He's coming in to be a camp arm for the spring. And if he parlays that into sticking around in August and maybe even being like the practice squad guy during the season, then cool. That's a worthwhile endeavor. But as it pertains to Will Levis, both parties would like to see a change here. I think it's just a matter of time before we do. I'm most curious to see what that trade will look like, not whether or not the trade will happen. At this point, I am expecting Will Levis to be wearing a different jersey come September.
I'm just curious about the value, because I may be crazy. I can make an argument that now and in the future, Will Levis has got a way higher ceiling than Mitch Trubisky, and it's not even close. And so for an organization that is low on talent, why not keep him around with the new group and see what he becomes, at least for a year, see what you've got. But it seems like they've made their mind up, and they have for a while now. And so I'm curious what they think they could get for him.
I'm with you in finding this really fascinating, because you can make an argument for him to be way more valuable than people think that he is, or way less valuable than people are hoping he is. On yep. one side of the coin, he is a guy that from an athletic standpoint, you're right. Like the the ceiling is extremely high, and there are absolutely coaches around the league that remember scouting him and remember watching him play for the Titans, and they think, I can fix that guy because his arm is outrageous. He is built in a way that is pretty fantastic in terms of NFL athleticism at the quarterback position. Like, there's a lot of tantalizing things about Will Levis. He's just got to get his head right, and the processing speed has to increase. And he's young, and he's cost-controlled. So, like, there's all these reasons why I could see, like, Kenny Pickett got traded multiple times in recent memory for essentially fourth-round pick value. So why couldn't Will Levis get something like that or better? Because, again, Will Levis is a significantly better athlete than Kenny Pickett is and has a significantly better arm than Kenny Pickett does, and significantly bigger hands, for that matter. The flip side of the coin is that they've basically shown their hand here, right? Like, in terms of leverage, I'm not sure what leverage exists because everybody knows the Titans need to get rid of this guy. And also, and maybe more importantly, we've not seen him play football in essentially a year. The surgery timing, the decision to get that surgery at the very beginning of training camp last July, just put this team in a tough spot for him in terms of trading, because whoever trades for him is going to have to just go based on faith and trust on what the Titans are saying, that they don't have anything to work off of here in terms of projecting him as a guy that's healthy and back to ready to develop. So I don't know. If I had to guess, it would be like a fifth round value, but I really am just guessing.
Easton, last one. In theory, let's say they don't take Love with the fourth pick. Now they have Michael Carter in this mix of running backs now that are on the roster. If they rolled with that group, the current group right now, do you think that could give them a sufficient running game, or does there have to be another ingredient in there?
No, I think that it can. I mean, Robert Saleh was talking about this. In this time of year, you expect this from him, whether he means it or not. I'm not calling him a liar by any means, but there's some glad-handing going on here. He was talking about how, you know, Tony Pollard...
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, Tony Pollard ran for triple digits on San Francisco last year. He remembers that. I remember that. I remember Tony Pollard as the offensive line started to figure it out, and this is instructive when it comes to a guy like Jeremiah Love, whether people want to realize it or not. Like, the Titans offensive line started to put it together last year, and suddenly Tony Pollard went from a guy that had lost it seemingly in the first half of the year to a guy that was putting up multiple 100-plus yard rushing games down the stretch when, notably, no one was watching the Titans anymore. So I do think it's sufficient. Is it an above average running game with Spears and Pollard and second year Mullings? Probably not. Maybe. It all depends on if Tajay Spears can stay healthy and be as big an impact as you would hope he would be. It depends on whether Khalil Mullings can turn into like a useful rotational player, which we honestly didn't see enough from him last year to say one way or another on. But is it a average group? I do think it's an average group. So I think some Jeremiah Love fans have kind of twisted themselves into thinking the Titans have to get a better running back because their running back situation stinks right now, and Jeremiah Love's the only one that's available. I don't feel that way.
Easton Freeze of A to Z Sports has been our guest on D-Maze, Bingen, and Donick. Easton, fabulous stuff, my friend. Thank you for joining us. Let's do it again soon.
Let's do it again, guys. Yep. Always a pleasure.
615-737-1025. A lot of insight there from Easton Freeze. We will react to what he had to say. You can as well. 615-737-1025. Also coming up next, Mike Sando of The Athletic polled NFL executives on AFC teams in free agency. What did they say about the Titans? We'll bring that to you next. 615-737-1025. Swing by John Daly. See what I did there? It's a golf pun. Swing by John Daly's, located at 1907 Division Street in Nashville this Saturday for a basketball watch party you do not want to miss. And it's brought to you by Good Boy Vodka. You can enjoy $25 Good Boy Bucket specials, and 1-2-5 at the game will be on site from 5 to 7 p.m. with prizes and more. Don't miss it. Only at John Daly's. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.